Hello, everyone. Before we start today's podcast, some exciting news for you. You can experience the Inside Politics podcast live in Dublin on May 16th when Hugh Linehan, Jennifer Bray and I will be joined by Cliff Young of Ipsos, one of America's top pollsters, to talk about the US election, our own local and European elections and much more. It's a breakfast event kicking off at 8 a.m. in Trinity College. If you'd like to attend, you can get tickets at irishtimes.com/events. That's irishtimes.com/events. I hope we see lots of you there.
It's getting quite late, but it is still Wednesday, June the 14th, and you are very welcome to this latest edition of the Inside Politics podcast from the Irish Times. I'm Hugh Linehan. Earlier today, Leo Varadkar officially became a Taoiseach, and a little while ago, he informed the Dáil of his choices for cabinet office. I am joined by Pat Leahy, Mary Minahan and Fia Kelly, all of whom have spent the day up in the environs of Leinster House observing these proceedings. Pat, I was live blogging it all day for my sins from a distance, but from your perspective, closer to the action, what were the big surprises, if any?
I'm not sure there was any huge surprises, really. You know, we knew Leo Varadkar was going to be comfortably elected Taoiseach. He had the votes in the bag. We knew today was about the selection of his cabinet. The significant moves, the nomination of Pascal Donoghue to head not just the Department of Public Expenditure, but also the Department of Finance, had been flagged in advance. The promotion of Michael Ring, of Regina Doherty, of Owen Murphy, all of those had been suggested in advance, even if we didn't know, of course, for sure whether they were going to happen or not. I suppose, you know, if there was a surprise, It might have been the demotion of Mary Mitchell O'Connor. It had been suggested in around Leinster House over the last week or so, or the last few days, that she would survive. So I wasn't personally terribly surprised that she was that she was demoted in the event, but I think there was some surprise around Leinster House that she was. Other than that, I think the important characteristics of the day were that, albeit that there were some personnel moves, some reconfigurations of the departments, including, you'll be delighted to hear, a dedicated Department of Culture, even if that is simply a renaming of existing functions and retains the same minister. But I thought in Leo Varadkar's acceptance speech, or rather in his speech nominating his government this evening, there was a definite direction set out for a number of the departments. He said specific things that they will do. There was, my initial assessment of it at least, was that there was a more plain speaking approach to what departments and ministers would do. So there was a number of specific things that we will be able to judge Leo Varadkar's government by in a couple of months, and they were set out in his.
Okay, well, is that maybe a first sign, Mary, of something which was suggested we might get, which is a bit less waffle out of Leo Varadkar than we might have had out of his predecessor?
Yeah, possibly. Certainly, he takes over from Enda Kenny, a very affable gentleman. But, you know, Leo Varadkar is a bit more of a Marmite man, like they used to say about Jeremy Corbyn. You know, you love him or hate him. And I think across the House in Leinster House, people are you know, I think it's his evolution has been welcomed because it gives a point of definition really for other parties. You know, I think if Simon Coveney had got into the position, it would have been kind of difficult for Micheál Martin, the two Cork men, to kind of have a go at each other. So I think the Labour Party too, I think they're pretty happy that he's in place, not because they like him particularly or his policies, it gives them something to fight against. But yes, you know, obviously all the international coverage is about Leo Varadkar, this 38-year-old gay half Indian man who's, you know, taken over, and it's a massive departure from their perception of the stereotype of Ireland. But really, I think he's going to be a very different kind of Taoiseach from those who preceded him because of the very particular set of challenges that he faces. And I agree with Pat. I think he did outline those very clearly and really attached them to different departments in a very, very clear way. And, you know, a key thing would be Brexit. Simon Coveney, as we had anticipated, got foreign affairs, but special responsibility for Brexit, which strikes me as a more sensible thing to do than to formulate a whole new department around Brexit. So housing was the other thing. I felt he was giving Simon Coveney a little bit of a dig, actually, a passing dig when he talked about the need to review housing.
He talked about the need to review, like rebuilding Ireland was Simon Coveney's keynote plan since he took up that role this time last year about solving the housing crisis. And he said that we're going to review that plan within 3 months and change it where it needs to be changed. And he put a heavy emphasis on, and we'll build social housing if it needs to be built. Kind of, you know, you didn't do enough on that front. Another thing he said during his leadership campaign, he cast serious doubt on the controversial Help to Buy scheme, which was one of the main planks of last year's budget, the first time homebuyers grant. I would anticipate that that will get scrapped as well within this review.
Yeah, there was another suggestion in that section where he dealt, in his speech, where he dealt with the allocation of the housing portfolio, where he suggested that they would look at measures that might make it more attractive for landlords to stay in the business of providing rental accommodation, or for landlords to get into it. Now, to me, that suggests that they will look at some sort of tax incentives, you know. So I thought they were.
He kind of has been privately critical of Simon Coveney's housing policy for a number of months, for Radcliffe, and I think that tonight was the first time. So we saw his thoughts being imposed upon that particular department, because he can.
So could I ask you then, Fiac, I mean, is that then a sign that he's going to hit the ground running? I know that's very much the impression which he would have desired to give today, but that, you know, he's got a bunch of ideas, he's clear about what he wants on Brexit, on Northern Ireland peace talks, on capital investment, on the housing crisis. Maybe the health system is a bit of a mystery, but is there a sense of kind of, you know...
Well, he set himself, as Pat said, he set his government identifiable tasks to implement now. Like, he went through them quite in a detailed fashion. Like, you know, this department here, you will do X, Y and Z. This department here, I expect this to be done. It was quite deliberate. It was deliberately done that way, so we will have something to measure him off. And he has already given us signposts about, you know, infrastructural spending, changing the debt to GDP ratio, all these things we will expect to see in the weeks and months ahead. And he clearly does anticipate doing that, because he's told his parliamentary party meeting yesterday that they will have to sit for a week longer at the end of this Dáil term. So he clearly wants to get to the summer with a wind at his back, not just in terms of popularity and opinion polls, but have concrete legislative achievements to his name by that stage.
I mean, some of the priorities that he raised, like, you know, and there were obviously priorities for the government in turn, you know, in the Northern Ireland talks, the resuscitation of the institutions, the Brexit negotiations, many of those things, the moving parts of those are outside his control. But other things like capital investment, be it in housing or in roads and schools and hospitals and so forth, they will be directly within. He also referenced broadband very directly in the speech tonight when he was talking about that department. Those are within the capacity of government to act upon and deliver. And I think it will be quite clear whether progress is being made on those. One other point that interested me in that speech tonight, where he was talking about the Department of Health, when he said that you know, he was retaining Simon Harris, which was a surprise to some people, but I think it would have been a bigger surprise had Simon Harris been demoted. But he tasked him with coming up with a response to the all-party report on the future of healthcare, which was set up last year to kind of take the politics out of health policy in Ireland, insofar as such a thing might be possible. That was what it was tasked with doing. And it issued a report recently, which is, you know, a 10-year reform plan, which has some quite radical departures in it, such as complete separation of public and private healthcare, the ending of, you know, the privately insured patients being treated in public hospitals and so forth. Many things which would be greatly alarming to an awful lot of Fine Gael TDs and voters. But interestingly, I thought Varadkar said that he would task Simon Harris with the response to that report, not with its implementation. So I think that will be, in terms of healthcare, that you mentioned earlier, Hugh, I think that would be interesting.
He also told him to prepare for a referendum on repeal on the Eighth Amendment next year.
Which level is not a surprise, but perhaps the clarity.
I didn't expect to hear it in that speech at that time.
I'm subject to correction on this, but I don't think the Taoiseach or any government minister has previously said there will be a referendum. What they've said is they've reiterated this, you know, the requirements of this process that has been set up by the Oireachtas. So the Citizens' Assembly reported it's now gone to an Oireachtas committee. And previously people had said that it depends on what the report of the committee is.
What I took from that was that when he met Catherine Zappone last week as part of the, you know, renewing the government vows process, she had asked for a parallel process to be set up to the Oireachtas committee on the Eighth Amendment that would look at potential wordings and potential legislation that would kind of be in place, will be put to the people along with the wording. She had asked that be done as a parallel process with the committee, and he had agreed with it. So when I heard that tonight, that's what I thought it was him granting her wish.
Now, realistically, Mary, when I heard him say that, and I was looking at various people, including protagonists on either side of the Eighth Amendment debate, tweeting about it as well, and they were essentially saying, if that's to happen, well, that means really effectively that there has to be a referendum by late spring next year, by May of next year.
Yeah, was it Ruth Coppinger then stood up and asked him?
Because of the papal visit in particular.
Yeah, that point was raised by Joan Burton of Labour, actually. She said it would be a good idea to have it before the papal visit. But yeah, I think it was Ruth Coppinger asked him to commit, because he didn't commit to a date. She asked him to commit to an early as possible for next year. But one thing that struck me when he was talking today, another point of difference between him and his predecessor, I think we're going to see much more of a micromanager Taoiseach than a delegator. Enda Kenny was the world's greatest delegator. He was quite content to allow his ministers to go off and do their thing, and he didn't interfere too much. Leo Varadkar has already said that he will be basically sitting on the shoulder of the Minister for Health. You know, he said, I've got unfinished business in health. Now, what exactly that means, we don't know. It's very interesting to look back at Leo Varadkar's record in health. Yeah. You know, a lot of people.
Why so?
Well, just because a lot of people say, what did he do in health? Like, I'll tell you what he did. He was basically put in there after James Riley, tasked with calming the thing down. No more scandals, no more big stories, just settle the place. And he achieved that.
The abandonment of the big structural reform that Fine Gael had promised, universal health insurance, that was his job.
He asked for a big ball of money when he was in there. He asked, you know, I need £1 billion to sort this out. So, you know, the first question would be, you know, you've said that that department needs €1 billion extra. Are you going to give it to him?
And the very popular free GP care for under sixes. Complete nightmare for GP surgeries, but
an absolute delight for parents
of under sixes.
What Mary says is quite true in a way, because speaking to people around Varadkar in recent days, and you're like, you know, what's he doing with the reshuffle? And they're like, we don't know. You know, he's probably only keeping it to himself. And there was a question about whether he was actually telling Brian Murphy, his close advisor. And people say, you know, he thinks he is his best political advisor. He thinks he is the best political strategist in his team, and that may be his downfall as well.
He is the best political strategist in his team. People, like Donald Trump thinks that.
Yeah, people who are around him say, like, you know, Varadkar firmly himself believes that I am the best political strategist and thinker.
I totally agree with you, Faith.
Of my contemporaries, of my apparatus, and someone who knows him well, speaking to him, say, look, that is his strength, but it could be coming.
That sounds like something that could come before a fall.
Yeah, but you look at Theresa May. Like, look, those two advisors that she sacked recently. Like, she's a different person now since they're gone. That happened to Enda Kenny. Remember, Enda Kenny transformed beyond recognition when Kieran Conlon got his hands on him, basically, didn't he? You know? And that happened to Michael Noonan. Michael Noonan was Michael Noonan, we all know. He suddenly became this kind of grinning, stiff, this unrecognisable person when he was Fine Gael leader. So, yeah, I think Fiacha is right that, you know, Leo Varadkar, it's not that he doesn't take advice. I think he does take advice, but he firmly believes his advice is best.
I think what he tends to do, and I think we've seen this kind of reflection of this today, what he tends to do, I think, is listen to advice, think, and then act. Often act quite boldly.
Yeah.
Drives those actions? Mary, sticking with you, I mean, just looking at the debates today, which weren't particularly impressive, to be honest, but one of the things that was really clear was that the the opposition in all its various forms. For the most part, Fianna Fáil was interesting. It was more sophisticated and subtle, maybe. But for the most part, we're intent upon fixing Leo Varadkar as an extreme right politician further to the right than we had seen in previous Taoiseach or leaders of Fine Gael. Yeah. And that was very much the line of attack from Sinn Féin, People Before Profit, Solidarity and various other parties.
Yeah.
Is that going to continue on and on? And is that going to be part of the dynamic of the discussion that happens?
Yeah, I think they, as I say, welcome almost his arrival because they get to depict him as a Tory boy, their number one enemy. And he did address that to some extent. Again, that surprised me in his speech. He talked about how his own views had evolved since 2007. And, you know, I thought, well, thank goodness, because like if your views hadn't evolved in 10 years, that would be very, very strange, you know. So I think, I mean, we can look back at what he said on things like abortion, even on gay marriage. Like his views definitely he do said, seem to have changed.
He said the night he was elected Fine Gael leader, you know, I'm still evolving.
Yeah.
He said, I am evolving.
Well, that's healthy. But, you know, I think he has shown a degree of political courage at times that suited him. The number one example has got to be, you know, all the controversy going on with the guards when he talked about, he used the word distinguished instead of disgusting. You know, the timing, it was a nightmare for his cabinet colleagues.
I remember covering that, and it was an innocuous road safety report launch, and the political correspondents, of which I was one, were summoned down to Dublin Castle to this. We wondered what the hell we were doing there, you know. And then he came out with this thing, like, you know, so it was clearly very thought through, as Pat says, calculated, and now I will do it.
But when he uses a phrase, Pat, like Republic of Opportunity, and then it's, you know, thrown back in his face as being somehow a line which represents a certain idea of, you know, I suppose a Norman Tebbit, getting your bikeism kind of an approach. Is that, you know, is that the kind of dynamic that's going to go on in terms of this?
There will be an attempt to characterise him, as Mary says, as Tory boy. I'm not sure that will be successful, to be honest, because A, it's stretching the truth, but also I think there's a fair-sized constituency out there that he wants to talk to and whose votes that he wants to win that fully endorse things like a Republic of Opportunity, who fancy themselves as the people who get up early in the morning. I think he wants to talk to them electorally. I think the jump he will have to make is that as Taoiseach, he needs to represent to and speak to, he needs to represent and speak to other constituencies as well.
He talked during the Fine Gael campaign about how Simon Coveney's idea of appealing to everybody, you appeal to everybody, you appeal to nothing, was one of his criticisms of Simon Coveney. And that, again, was raised today by Micheál Martin, who essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but said, if you're Taoiseach, you have to, you know, you're serving everybody. Mm. So is there a tension there between his vision of an electorally successful Fine Gael and
There is a tension, but the story of being a politician in a leadership position, particularly leadership as elevated as the position of Taoiseach, is one of tension, because it's tension between politics and government. It's tension between, you know, thinking about the next election and delivering long-term solutions to problems that society faces. So that tension is there in every aspect of political leadership. I think it will be there with Mr. Varadkar. How he manages it, I think, will be one of the interesting things to behold this summer. And I think we will get a sense pretty quickly, as we have done, I think, tonight with his contributions in the Dáil, as to how different his premiership is going to be. I think he has the potential, and who knows how it may play out, but I think he has the potential to change a lot of our political discourse towards a more direct, perhaps more confrontational, certainly more defined politics. And I think that would be interesting to watch. Now, it may be that the kind of mushy centrism of Irish politics, you know, and mitigates against that and overcomes those kind of defining, or his instincts towards a sharper political definition. But even as he would fancy himself a representative of the centre, in his speech earlier on today, he gave evidence that that centre will be a bit more aggressive, a bit more jealous of its own territory. When he talked about, and one very practical thing,
yes,
that he signalled, the speaking time in the Dáil, which has given equal time to very small independent groups and Fianna Fáil and Fianna Gael.
It drew applause from both the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael benches. No, but he was quite, as Pat says, assertively saying, this is the centre and the centre is going to stand up for itself once more. And he was identifying almost himself with Fianna Fáil against everybody else around them. And that kind of struck true a few speeches today. There was quite a lot of kind of generous interplay between the two centrist parties.
So what does that mean for, as I said, Mary, I mean, what does that mean for Fianna Fáil? Because I was interested by the way that Micheál Martin navigated his way through
so
those
I
today.
Thought Micheál Martin's speech was a masterpiece today. And I thought it was almost getting a little bit too cosy for a while. Mm. But then he struck with the Maura Whelan line, you know, that it was a speech of two halves, you know, it had all this lovely, you know, praise for Mr. Varadkar welcoming his parents and all this stuff. And then suddenly it was just going in hard and they chose that timing so perfectly. Fianna Fáil could have, that story's been out now for a while. They could have gone with that last night, but they chose to bring this up, this appointment of the former AG, Maura Whelan, to the Court of Appeal.
Political business, really.
Well, that's how Micheál Martin characterises it, as a very direct political appointment. And he's saying, look, Leo Varadkar, you know, you're supposed to be representing this new politics. What are you doing here? And obviously he took the dig at Shane Ross, who has been banging the drum of this new judicial appointments bill, but yet waves this appointment through. There's a lot to be delved into on that one. And it's been kind of overshadowed by the big set piece events of the last few days. But it's not going to go away.
Like if you have this, possibly you end up, as has been suggested, this more direct form of leadership with a new Taoiseach. And if and when things go wrong, or if and when things are, you know, a government becomes vulnerable, does that mean that things are going to get spikier faster then on issues like
things
this?
Things will be spikier generally, I think. Mm-hmm. But Pat says is right, you know, we are probably departing that era of mushy centrism, as Pat quite adequately put it, where everybody kind of agrees with the broad aspect of things. We're now going to see a lot more confrontation across the House. Whether that kind of means that when we get into a sticky spot like we did last February with the Garda Commissioner and that everything comes falling down, I'm not so sure. I don't detect a desire among Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael for an immediate election. They're looking at electorates all over the world and go, why would you venture out into that jungle when you just don't know what's going to happen to you? Like, we've seen it again and again. So there's a kind of a contentment almost amongst various TDs and people in the back rooms about, let's just leave it go for a while. So I don't think that might necessarily follow that it will precipitate a government collapse, but it will be a kind of a more interesting joust nonetheless.
And a more productive government, because one of the criticisms part of this government since the election last year has been that it hasn't been very productive.
That would be one of the great early challenges, I think, to deliver an electric shock to the apparatus of government to get it functioning again. For understandable reasons, the engine of government has pretty much stalled over the last 3 months, with some exceptions. There's some budget work going on in the background. There's a lot of activity on Brexit, but in general, the business of government has almost come to a halt. And one of Mr. Varadkar's early tasks, I think, will be to get it moving again. He talked earlier in one of the speeches about a full day strategic cabinet meeting. That
you have your run in the mill cabinet meeting every week where you would deal with the issues today, and then you would set aside one. I think it was every quarter.
Did he say the first one was on climate change? Am I right?
I remember
he said that would be the first item on the agenda.
But I remember him listening off. I remember when he listened to that big, he said he talked about big strategic positions, like Northern Ireland was definitely one, sure. Europe was another, and I think climate change.
But we didn't expect climate change.
Well, that's
very
interesting. I noticed Eamon Ryan pointed out quite rightly there was 2 hours of debate on climate change. He was the first person to mention it.
It does strike me that Varadkar is, you know, in one way he's a very old-fashioned politician. He covers all bases. Like, look at the very skillful way the geography was worked out through the reshuffle there. You know, his very clever appointment, I think, of Joe McHugh, obviously a husband of Alwyn Enright, his key supporter. They're kind of like the Underwoods of Donegal up there, you know. They're skillfully organising things behind them. That's a compliment. You know, and but on the other hand, I think he's a nimble thinker. He knows how to skillfully move towards fresh new topics. Like, I don't think climate change, environmentalism troubles him too much. But I think he did respond to Eamon Ryan's very persuasive and passionate intervention today when he said something along the lines of, you know, despite all the avocado toast and your jogging and frappuccinos, you know, there isn't a stripe of green on you. So I think Varadkar was very skillfully able to say, you know, climate change is going to be a big thing. I could see Dennis Nocton kind of shifting kind of uncomfortably in his seat at that. I don't think he'd be too delighted about it. But
I think he would be demanding of his minister.
Yes. Telling them the Minister for Climate Change isn't comfortable about climate change being higher on the agenda.
That's anyway. Because he's got a lot of farmers to deal with, I'd say.
I think he'll be a more demanding taskmaster of his ministers than maybe Enda Kenny in at least his latter incarnation has been. And I think that will be one of the things that we will have to watch on him. I think, you know, those of us who watched the Fine Gael leadership campaign and saw the debates and that will have been struck by the extent to which he had a pretty coherent grasp of the full ambit of activities of government right across the policy spectrum, right across the departmental spectrum. And I think he would be nosy about about what his ministers are up to. I think cabinet committees, which in some respects are the engine of cabinet decision making, will become more active. Enda Kenny used to have all the cabinet committees on a single day once a month to leave him free to open swimming pools and so forth in Mayo on the other three Mondays of the month. One of the things to watch.
It sounds to me like you're all quite enthusiastic about the months ahead.
Well, that could be the beers.
The background noises might have given them away.
Let's just strike a note of caution. I think Pat's again right. Enda Kenny talked about, I'm going to have report cards and scorecards for ministers. That's total nonsense that never came to pass. I'm going to sack underperforming ministers. I think Varadkar will operate. Show don't tell. He will actually sit on them, but he's not going to go on the Late Late Show and tell us he's going to give them C's and D's and sack them. But I think, you know, it is easy to be enthused about the newness and the freshness that we're seeing, but let's not get carried away with ourselves. Theresa May was being talked about the Iron Maiden in like 6 months ago. In the heat of political contest and decision making, she was tested and she fell short. So the only proper verdict, or not proper, the only initial verdict we can give on this guy will be next January when he's gone through a budget, I think.
Yeah, I think one thing that will give him a great deal of power over the rest of his government is the closeness of his relationship with Pascal Donoghue, who, let us not forget, is now Minister for Finance as well as Minister for Public Expenditure and will wield an influence across government because of his command of the purse strings that is comparable and in some ways superior
to Leo's Tony Blair.
Not quite, because for Coveney would have been.
I don't think Pascal detests Leo in the way that
Brown came to. Stabbing his car, the back of his car seat, with markers and throwing cans of coke around the office. Mm. But we'll keep an eye on that. You know?
Yeah, we'll watch that. We'll be pleased to report on this and any other developments.
Indeed, on that happy note, we shall leave it there, and we shall retire to our beers. For which, thanks to our producer Declan Conlon. Thanks also to Fiac and Mary and Pat for joining us. Remember, you can find me on hlinnan@irishtimes.com, and you can find me and everybody else in this studio very easily on Twitter. But until the next time, goodbye and thanks very much for listening.